Hey, welcome to the Product Leadership Podcast from Lighthouse London, where we talk about how to validate, launch, and maintain successful digital products with product owners, innovators, digital experts, and founders. Lighthouse London are a digital design and product development team who spent the last 10 years helping people conceive, build, and steer digital products. You can find out more about us and more podcast episodes at wearelighthouse.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, Dan here for this episode, and I'm joined by Tom.
Hey, yeah.
And on this episode, we wanted to look at something that happens a lot at the beginning of product development, when we talk about the framework we put in place for conceiving and building products. This is something that we talk about right at the beginning, and it's research. So it's part of how you learn about what people want without building things, which from every angle is a win, because building things is expensive. You have to learn what people want. If you learn what people want too late, then it's game over.
Correct.
So we thought we'd just run through research as in specific. There's lots of ways of learning things, of course. There's prototyping and having people test those. There's other ways available for getting information about what people want, but research is just such a powerful one, and it's something we often find people are a bit worried about doing. People don't really know where to start in it, and they kind of look at us as research experts. And I think the thing about research is once they see it done, they realize there's no real trick to it.
No, it's pretty easy.
It's talking to people generally, on the whole. There's some techniques that involve other stuff, but it's getting good at listening, essentially.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tom kind of does a lot of this at Lighthouse, and so he's going to kind of walk through the ins and outs of research, really, a bit of a primer.
Yeah, totally. It's meant to be a quick idiot's guide, I guess, to how you might start to think about research and the sort of things you should be looking for. I've broken it down into four headings.
Yeah. Okay, so the first of those is, why should you research?
Why? So this is the most obvious one. We meet people a lot who come with ideas for products, so a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, young startups, that kind of thing. And some of them have done a bit of research about their idea. A lot of them surprisingly haven't. So this is the first thing we talk about generally when people come through the door. It's, have you done some research? And the main reason why is that you need to make sure your idea is validated before you put it out into the open. So kind of what Dan's touched on already. But when you're starting out, you've got something you think is going to turn into a viable business. Or even as you're moving forward with a product, you want to make sure that the new features you push out, you know, your roadmap for the product is going to hit well with your customers. So doing research is how you work out whether that validation has been done, whether people are going to actually like what you produce for them.
And it's such an easy win, isn't it? It's like a tool, I would say, that's there available to people because it doesn't require specialist skills. It doesn't require much investment other than time. And so as a tool in the entrepreneur's or product owner's toolkit. It depends how they vision themselves as a superhero or as some
or a
kind
builder.
Of as a builder. They're both. It's there and people just don't deploy it because I think it's easy to worry that research is going to prove you wrong sometimes.
It's definitely that. I think, you know, when you've been thinking about something for a long time, it's quite easy to shy away from some tough questions around whether this is actually something that's going to be a success or whether anyone actually cares. But yeah, like you say, doing research is a relatively simple skill to learn. It's no more than asking questions of people and actually sitting back and hearing what they say. So something that everyone can do. It does take a little while to get half decent at it because it's often easy to ask the wrong questions when you start out. But it's something that really needs to be at the kind of backbone of the work that you do. So anything you're looking to bring to life, make new or improve upon, you should be relying on research as the kind of foundation to your building blocks there.
Yeah, it's a skill you'll use throughout the life of a product. You'll never stop researching. Like, you might do it more heavily at the beginning, but as feedback starts coming, you're going to be listening to that as well.
I thought it would be worth touching on some of the stuff that you might get out of doing research. So obviously the first is that you validate your idea, which is incredibly important. No one likes launching a product to a big fanfare and see that no one even uses it. That's terrible. We have done that a long time ago, then started doing research and that rapidly changed. But there are other kind of smaller things that you can see happening from research. So it's relatively easy to validate a good idea, and you can do that with a small subset of people. We'll come onto all this kind of stuff later. But things that can change are massive savings in cost and time. So we've run a few product builds before where there was a big list of features that people wanted, chat rooms, say, messaging features, forums, all sorts of stuff that people thought their customer wanted. Through running pretty lightweight research, which is just face-to-face talks of people, hearing about their problems, exploring their lives a bit more, we've just found that these sort of things often aren't even needed, or certainly weren't needed at launch. So you can see that, in some cases we've saved... we've had a long list of things to do and have cut that by 2/3. And you can imagine the time saved there, and certainly the time saved would have an implication for cost with your dev team or an agency that you're working with. So you can really find some significant changes to what you're planning to do just through doing lightweight research and talking to people. And that can really go free up budget for other stuff or just reduce the overall cost of what you're looking to do in various different ways.
Yeah, and it changes... entrepreneurs, it improves people. Like, no business gets worse because it learns how to listen to its customers well.
Absolutely.
And having that embedded in an early stage into the culture of a business is key.
Yeah, certainly. And also, if you were pushing out new features, if you had a big roadmap for your product, you had, say, 5 to 10 things that you thought were the ones you wanted to focus on on the horizon in the next phase of work, you can do a bit of research around them as well, and that might tell you which ones are the most important to your customer. You should be doing this anyway, but if you're not, that's going to tell you what priorities may be up next, what the priority should be for your product.
Hey, this is Laura from Lighthouse. Our product sprints are the perfect way to get ideas validated and in front of customers in just a few days. To find out more, head over to wearelighthouse.com/product sprint.
So what kind of activities are we talking about carrying out when we talk about research?
Yeah, so this is more kind of practical advice, really. There's a bunch of different stuff you can do, and it really depends where you are in the life of your product. So every time people come in, we ask them, like I said earlier, have you done some research? A lot of them have done chatting to their mates, standard stuff, chatting to the family. That's all good, but you really shouldn't rely on that. There'll be another plug for the mum test here. all your friends and family are going to tell you that your idea is great, and you really need to step away from that as quickly as you can. Some people have done a bit of market research with kind of surveys, sending things out to their wider social group. That sort of stuff is great for some kind of lightweight validation, but again, I think there are pros and cons to that approach. What we generally recommend as a first port of call is going and sitting with your customer face to face, talking to them in person, and having a, and it doesn't need to be a lot of people, a handful will do, 5 to 10. More's great, but you don't necessarily need to do that many. But those conversations will tell you a lot about what your the problems they face, whether your idea is something that they're at all interested in. It's important to get those right, though. So a big thing that's worth thinking about is how to get rid of bias in your discussions. You don't want to go and pitch people your idea. You want to go and sit there and learn about their lives, their jobs, the frustrations they have around the topic you're talking about. There are loads of schools of thought as to how you should run a face-to-face interview. We've tried a bunch out. It depends on what you're looking to find out, how sure you are of your idea and what your assumptions might be. But we've often found that asking kind of almost dumb, broad questions of someone is a really good place to start. Just let them talk and kind of, you know, listen to what they say, really. From then on, it will be hard at first when you first do a face-to-face interview, but you get better at it the more you do.
Yep.
You can then start to, like, lightly lead the question towards the sort of niche you're looking to find out more about. It's important not to ask leading questions. You can lead them towards a subject potentially, but what you really want to do is hear the user back up your assumption without prompt, which is a really powerful thing to do, because if you ask them a straight up, would you use this question, you know, they say yes or no, it doesn't really tell you that much. But if they've actually come around to the problem that you have, or assume that they have, with light prompting, or, you know, just a general discussion in that area, that validates your idea much better.
Yeah, you want to know the last time they tried to solve the problem that you're talking about, not do they think they would use your product.
Yeah.
Because that, you don't want people speculating what they do, you want examples about what they have done. And I think you're right, Tom, as you do these face-to-face interviews and get good at asking the right sorts of questions, doing the right sort of listening, you eventually start to carry them out without even people knowing you're doing them. I mean, regularly in the office, I'll get halfway through a conversation with someone and suddenly realise, hang on, you're interviewing me about something.
Like always.
You come up with an idea and you're testing it out on me without trying to alert me to the fact you're doing that. And it's something, I think, just getting good at what the right questions are is really important. And as you say, kind of learning how to listen. Because if you ask someone, when did you last try and sell, you know, someone might tell you, oh, I love the idea of that product, it's going to really change my life. And you say, okay, cool, it solves problem X. When was the last time you Googled for a solution to problem X? And they say, I've never tried to solve that problem. Well, if someone's never even tried to solve a problem, how big a problem is it for them? So you really got to use that. You could be led down the path that this is a great idea, when in fact what you could be finding out is there isn't a market for this.
Yeah, you kind of want to lead. We've often found that asking questions where the answer is yes or no is not necessarily the right way to do it. Really what you want to do is just start up a kind of monologue from the person you're interviewing. So you should definitely be speaking a lot less than them. If that's not happening, then I think you probably need to think about the way you're conducting the interview. I mean, some people don't like to talk, so that's difficult, but that's another story entirely. But yeah, in general, just sit there and listen to what they have, talk about their problems, understand what makes them tick in many ways, and you'll often find you'll learn a surprising amount through asking a very small number of questions. Certainly the better you get, the less you'll say and the more they'll say. It's often also good to leave a pause, so don't feel like you have to fill holes in the conversation. You can often get a bit of gold when it kind of gets slightly awkward and you know, everyone's gone silent. Don't rush to fill holes, because you might find then someone leads into something quite interesting. So it's just something that can work really well.
Hey, this is Christy from Lighthouse. I've been working on speccing and building out MVPs for our clients recently. Find out about how we help people get validated ideas built over at wearelighthouse.com/MVP.
Moving on, you know, the face-to-face stuff's really powerful. It's great, but it doesn't scale well. Because obviously, you know, your time's going to be taken up doing this. I'm sure you've got plenty more to be doing as well, unless you're a full-time researcher, which is great. But yeah, there are other techniques. I mentioned surveys and stuff before. We've carried that out for a bunch of people in the past. So when you've validated that idea with your core customer by sitting with them and talking to them, there are many options for pushing out surveys, using your social channels to push things out. You know, a well-designed survey, questionnaire, that kind of thing can provide really, really good feedback, but only should be used after you've done that first phase of validation. And you have to be really careful about how you design those questions. It takes a lot of thought to get that stuff right. Again, it comes with experience of getting bad responses back, getting unhelpful answers. You can also hire professionals to do that kind of stuff. There are a lot of agencies out there that will do larger scale market research, and that can be very effective.
Yeah, absolutely, but quite expensive.
Can be, yep.
I mean, I think what you kind of do is, as the scale gets bigger, it gets more impersonal. So as you say, one-on-one chat is amazing for when you don't really know and you're kind of really trying to get ideas and find out how people actually do things day to day. then maybe you're moving to surveys and things where you can get hold of a group of people and you want to see if that backs up what you learned in your smaller samples. And then almost beyond that, you're moving to your proposition out there and kind of working out, if I put this ad up and send people to it, do they sign up? Which then you really have very little information other than yes, it worked, no, it didn't. But you can do that on a much larger scale because you're just buying traffic. So yeah, as it gets less personal, the conclusions get harder to draw. But you should be starting with that personal research. And when you feel you have something to validate from that research, take that out to the masses and see if it comes back in line with what you're expecting.
Yeah, it's very hard to know why someone put their email address in your newsletter sign up box and click the button. But when you're sitting in front of someone and can see how they react to questions you ask, their body language, you know, their tone of voice, you can learn so much from that. It's such a powerful thing to be able to do.
So that's what. And then who are you talking to? Just everyone you meet? People on the bus?
No.
Oh. unless it's about bus
people on buses, then yes.
You invented a new bus.
Do you like my bus? That's the wrong question to ask. So, I mean, obviously who you're talking to is your customer. I mean, this one is kind of self-explanatory and ties in with a bigger picture conversation around who you're aiming this product at. But you should have a pretty good idea. Even if you know you're starting something out or if you're in development, of who your customer is. We've covered this in other podcasts and blog posts. You should have a niche target audience if you're starting out, someone who you've identified, you kind of know a fair bit about them, you know where you might find them, and you know why this is targeted at them. If you don't have that, then you're probably being too broad. You know, you'll need to make sure that it's pretty obvious who the people you might reach out to are at this stage.
There's an argument to say that you could do the really broad stuff if you didn't have a solution, if you didn't even have a problem in mind, if you were just like, okay, this type of person over here who works for this kind of industry, they seem, you know, that's quite an old industry, I bet they've got loads of money and would solve, you know, they seem to work in a slow way, I wonder what I could build that they would pay for me to solve. Then you could then go to that sort of type of person and just broadly be like, okay, what's your day like? Where's your pain point?
Oh, definitely.
But really most entrepreneurs have identified a specific kind of solution, and this research will be about validating or not. So yeah, find the people that solution's for. You know, find the people you want to solve the problem for. And like you say, it should be a red flag for yourself if you're like, I don't really know who that person is. Well, okay, you know, maybe you don't need to be working on your research, then maybe you need to be working on your positioning.
Definitely, your proposition needs some thought there. I think if you're saying that the person you want to speak to at this stage is literally anyone who could be on the street, that's not a good sign.
No. And how hard are they to get to? I mean, how many of these people can you meet readily? Mm. You know, if you're building something for astronauts, ex-astronauts, well, you know, aren't many of them.
Yep.
So you need to be sure that it's worth the effort finding them. You know, I think almost it comes into the type of product people want to build sometimes is how easily can I find people to talk about this? So it's like, yes, there might be a huge opportunity if you could get to the heads of, you know, every major bank or something like that, and you want to solve something in that space, but maybe the first people you can get to are the people behind the counter. And so maybe the shape of your product should be for them. So it's kind of how easy you can find people to research with is actually often, for me, it's like a piece of value for the product. Like, if they're easy to find, then that's great. Your product actually now has a better chance of success and therefore is a more valuable product.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, getting out there and finding your customer, and if you don't know your customer, then maybe it's not quite time for research. But if you do know your customer, like, where should you actually be doing this? Are you, like, phoning them up? Are you stalking them?
Well, it ties in with who it is, obviously, because you've identified who these people are and you need to then go and find them. So that person will dictate this to a certain extent. Like we said earlier, ideally you want to have them face-to-face. So if they're someone local or someone you know, I mean, a lot of people who start out a new product business will do that in a sector that they know a lot about.
Yes.
So it might be something they, you know, they've done as a hobby or they have a passion for, or might be related to the job they do or have done. Most people will generally know where to find this people, you know, will know where to find their customer, and will have a relatively good insight as to how they might reach out to them. Ideally, you know, the classic thing is get out of the office and go and stop someone in the street and talk to them. It's a pretty daunting thing to do. I don't like doing that.
No.
But there's a lot to be said. So if you were targeting people who work in gyms or gym customers, where do you find these people? It's obvious. You go to the gym.
Yeah.
So you might be the annoying person that hangs around after class and asks people questions, or you might just, you know, stand around in the foyer of the gym and maybe stop a couple of people who look friendly as they walk past. But that's fine. That's the kind of thing you've got to do. I suppose you do have problems if you can't find those people in person, if there is no physical space to go to where you might track them down. So yeah, you might look online. There's forums, there's groups on Facebook, or, you know, various places around social networks where people hang out that will have this interest. That's a great place to start. Can you put some posts up that get you involved in the community? You know, your tactics around that will depend on who you're trying to target and what you're trying to find out. Then getting them on chat somewhere, on WhatsApp, on the phone, on Skype, whatever it is, will work really well. But essentially, you just need to go and find your customer where they hang out.
Yeah, get creative. You know, take a leaf out of the book of spammy kind of companies who do things like, I don't know, if you register a domain name, within the next week you're going to get people calling you, offering you to build you a website. That's because your details go on to the domain name registry, which is, if can be, public information. Someone that's just bought a domain name might want a website, so those people can read that and they ring you. And obviously that is a very annoying practice, but what is it that your customer is doing to indicate that they might need your solution? Again, similar example, my neighbours built a wall in their back garden, like a party wall. And again, that needs to be registered to someone that they're doing that. And then instantly, lawyers who are specialists in that are dropping notes through my letterbox. Is there something your customer does which you can watch? Like, can you search Twitter for someone saying, for a phrase that's like, you know, oh, I hate X product, and your product is a competitor to X product, or it's in the same space as X product. Finding a source of valuable potential customers, potential early adopters, again, there's no straightforward way of doing it. And the winner is the person that gets most creative, finds the best ones.
Certainly, if there are competitors out there, that's a big one. You know, look at their Twitter followers, look at their Instagram followers, whatever. You know, that's a bunch of fans of that service.
Yep.
If you're looking to compete in that sector, you could reach out to those people. You know, there'll be a lot of kind of cold outreach, cold emails, cold calls,
buy some
or
Twitter
whatever.
Ads, things like that.
Completely.
You need to get in front of these people. You need to be creative about how you find them. And it just depends on your idea how easy or hard that is.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to use your network or kind of the networks of third parties. So when we've done research before for clients, we've often just asked our friends on Facebook, and it's amazing who you know, friends of friends, that kind of thing. Equally, if you're looking to bring a service for a commercial client, you could approach them, and you know, they're obviously easy to find. They'll be fixed, they'll have locations, whatever. Yeah. They'll be very, very valuable people to speak to. Maybe they can give you access to their client base. If you're building a service which might work for them, and you're getting your validation from that business, they'll want that for their customers as well. They may well be more than happy for you to talk to some people that they have as customers, which might give you a direct in to lots of people to talk to.
If you're stuck for ideas, literally just put on your Facebook, you know, has anyone in the last 6 months done this? If that's the thing you're solving, you'll get a couple of people to speak to through that.
You don't need a lot of people to speak to as well. So we've often found we're overloaded with people to speak to. We've done that kind of stuff in the past, so much so that we have to politely refuse a lot of interviews.
So that's the why, the what, the who, the where. Are there any other W questions? I think there aren't.
Those are the ones I could think of.
That's fine. There aren't any other questions beginning with W. And therefore, that's the end of the research.
Well, there's when. But I think that's now.
You're right. When is incredible. Well, when is right at the beginning, before you develop.
Well, when is always.
Yes, you should always be. You're right. You should always be doing this throughout the life of your product. But what I love about it is that people who have an idea about something, in their minds, the blocker is, this is going to be complicated to build. This is going to be expensive to design. you know, I don't know what to do next. And research, you know, people come and talk to us, and research is something that we can send them away to do by mm-hmm. themselves.
Yeah.
And it hasn't cost them. And actually, they come back to us with way more information. Their idea is refined. Mm. You know, research is, it gives you the buzz of starting the project, because that is what you're doing. You are starting the project.
It is a good fun thing to do. Yeah. And you know, we've regularly had people come in who haven't done that. We've kind of sent them away with like a research homework piece to do.
Yeah.
Come back a couple of weeks later, you know, enthused by what they've learned. You know, yeah. they've actually talked to their customer face to face. They've learned all this cool stuff. They've had their idea validated. They've found out like some nuggets of gold that they hadn't thought about before. It's a great thing to do. And actually, you know, the more you do it, the more fun it becomes. It's actually yeah. one of my favorite parts of the product life cycle. You know, I really enjoy talking to people and just hearing about what they're up to and how this might help people as well.
And in a kind of bigger organization, it's something that can be done to kind of break the deadlock between the various factions that want the product to be different things. Mm. And again, it's something with an outcome. You know, you get the results of the research that people can look at and say, okay, we've taken a step with this product. We've learned something. It's going to be better because of that. And yet we haven't spent all our money.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of corporate clients, you know, larger enterprise clients embracing this kind of the importance of research in the past few years. It's a great way to win arguments internally, of which there are often a lot. Multiple stakeholders, senior, middle management, people doing the actual work, those challenges are quite hard to overcome, having all worked in those environments in the past. Hearing from your customer what they want is a great way to win those wars. Thanks for listening. If you want more product leadership content, then head over to the Lighthouse site, wearelighthouse.com, for more podcasts and blogs. To find out more about our product leadership framework, check out wearelighthouse.com/PLF. Find us on Twitter using @WeAreLighthouse, and if you've enjoyed the show, then we'd love a rating in iTunes to help spread the word. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to see the archive and get any future shows. Until next time, we'll see you then.